So with that, members, good morning. We're going to hear from Representative Olin. He has a bill, House File 3312, that he's going to tell us about.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and Committee. Basically, what this bill does is change one number in a statute. Right now, the way the statutes read, the counties or watersheds can only have funds up to 40,000 or 20% of the...
Excuse me for a moment, Representative Olin. We do have a quorum now, and okay. I call the meeting to order.
There is the quorum. Right.
And I will move your House File 3312 and recommend it to be passed and sent to Finance.
Thank you. Basically, what this bill does is, today's world, there's repair provisions in the existing statutes only allowing for $40,000 to be kept on hand for in a fund for future repairs, or 20% of the assessed benefits. Unfortunately, the only alternative to this procedure right now is to do a redetermination of benefits, which often costs far more to the few taxpayers involved in sub-projects than they could possibly begin to do. So what we sit with is $40,000 that we can use and very little ways to actually repair some drainage systems badly in need of repair. So what this bill would do is change the greater number to $100,000, more consistent with today's world. For information purposes, the 1989 legislature is the one that set the $40,000, which means that it hasn't been changed in 28 years. And if you figure in some kind of index, I would, in the inflation index, just to get it up to where today's economy is, you probably had a little over $100,000 to start with. So all this is doing is asking you to get to the $100,000 in a fund so people can actually do repairs that they're really having problems doing right now without nailing those that are in the ditch system extreme amounts of money in 1 year. I should point out, just to be fair and complete in this, and I have talked to Al Keene before this hearing, Chief Engineer Bowser, who's on obviously one of the leads on the drainage work group, and they would have just as soon had it go through their group first. And I could fully understand that position. The only reason I brought it here now is last year there was a lot of changes made in the drainage laws, and this would have been a relatively easy one to do, which unfortunately at that time my district didn't bring up, or I would have ran it over there in the first place when it should have been. And it didn't get included in the major revisions now. And if we don't do it now, then we're just looking at another delay because they don't have a meeting coming up before any kind of deadlines in our committee structure at this time. So all it does is change one number that will allow counties or watersheds to actually have a little leeway to collect more money in for repairs in a fund that's set up that the money just accumulates. Doesn't mean they'll always do that. So don't take it wrong. It's going to mean automatically everybody's going to max out all these funds. It won't happen, but it could happen. There are some projects I'm sure it would happen. And that's basically all the comments I have.
We'll take questions and then see if there's anyone in the audience that would like to testify. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Olin, just was checking. I see that someone here from the Watershed District, so... if what their position, and if there's somebody here from the counties, what their position is.
Okay, any other questions before we ask for folks to testify? I don't see any other questions, so welcome to the committee. Would you state your name for the record?
Hello, committee and members. My name is Jonathan Bowman from the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, and we've been working closely on the drainage work group. And I would revert all questions to Bowser. Al Keene is here. Okay. Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Keene would like to come up.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Al Kane, Chief Engineer for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I also facilitate the drainage work group, which is a broad stakeholder group of folks interested in drainage topics and issues. And I know that there is some concern that drainage issues do try to work through the drainage work group for consensus recommendations. This is a topic that wasn't raised last year whenever the work group was coming up with some recommendations for clarifications of drainage law. I think there is some concern that if feasible, the topic would run through the work group for consensus recommendations.
Representative Hanson.
Madam Chair, Mr. Kane, when is the next meeting of the work group?
Madam Chair, members, the work group has basically taken a break during session because many of the members are involved in the legislative process. So therefore, we do not have a meeting scheduled at this time during the next couple of months during session. So we probably would expect to pick up again near the end of session and begin again some discussions that were started last year.
If I can comment on that, that makes it difficult. What I was going to suggest is pass at the general register, leave it sit there and let this work group come up with a recommendation so we can get something done. And if
other comments or questions? Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mullen. I think that's a good idea because I know, Mr. Kane, in the past you've sent out by email to all the members drafts of topics, and if folks are unaware that it might cause a surprise, and I think there's a good consensus effort working there, so maybe if there's an electronic copy of the bill out, you can zap it out to people, and see if there's any objection. I don't think there would be. I mean, I think it may be that just folks aren't aware.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Moss.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard Representative Hagbarth whisper something here. I think it's a good idea. Maybe we actually just send it to finance make the change there.
We automatically send it to finance. So we return this bill to finance. That is our procedural motion.
Yeah, that would be the procedural motion. I was just looking at the way public safety finance has said it a couple times, and that's the end result, I think, anyways.
So, yes, Representative Mackinac.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that point, would that allow, if there was some need for potentially some additional testimony or something, that certainly can't happen on the House floor, yeah. If we send it to finance, could finance potentially send it back here or somewhere if we needed to take testimony and found something out?
That is true.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? I don't see any. So with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 3312 be returned, recommended to pass and returned to finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? No.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming, Representative Dietrich. Representative Dietrich, are you here? Your bill has not been sent to our committee yet, so what we will have to do is just hear from you. I cannot make a formal motion on your behalf, but we will hear from you and then ask you to return if that is workable for you. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's very workable, and I thank you for your flexibility this evening. And I don't know if you are aware that there is a delete all amendment. There is an amendment in a member's packet, and members can look at that. However, we cannot act on that without the bill in our possession. So, but people can read it, and you can talk about it. Thank you. And just so that everybody's clear, it is the 1268 amendment.
That is the amendment we have in our packet.
Okay, thank you. Members and Madam Chair, thank you for this opportunity to speak before you today. As I said in the other Environment Committee, this is not normally the circles I travel in the legislature, so these are very different, but yet familiar faces. The Delete All Amendment 1268, in general, what it does is it addresses the legislative oversight of the school trust lands. And it also expands the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee, and it redefines the role of the committee. And I hope in my testimony later today, this morning, I will make clear as to why that is needed. But a little bit of background as to how this bill even evolved is, during the interim, I was assigned to the task of chairing the School Trust Lands Work Group. And as a result of that work, we were invited by the DNR up to the school to visit the school trust lands. And in the bus on the way there, we watched a video of how the state of Utah is actually sees that there was some work that we could do in the state of Minnesota to shore that up and add some clarify the roles and the responsibilities of the legislature in regards to school trust lands. So, Madam Chair, if you don't mind, I would like to share a part of that video this morning.
We were busy.
Oh, I'm sorry. We can't find the video.
Okay. Well, that probably is a good idea because we are all shortchanged with time this morning.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair.
Can you act it out, maybe, Representative
Fisher? Pardon me?
You could act it out, maybe.
No.
I haven't seen this.
I am flexible, but not quite that. What I'd like to do then instead is refer you to the handout written by Brad Kelly, and it answers some questions about the school trust lands, if you have any questions about it, and makes reference to the Constitution of Minnesota as to what they say about the school trust lands, and it also refers to different legislation that has been passed in past years in regards to school trust lands. And it also helps you understand what the school trust lands are, what the role of the State Board of Investment is, and the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee is, since this bill does address those things. And also in your packets, you have a flow chart of how the money flows from the school trust lands to the school districts, and I thought that this might be helpful for you to look at too as far as context. So as I mentioned, I started investigating school trust lands, and it began with a trip up north, and when I got back here to St. Paul, I started looking into the topic a little bit more, and one of the what really confirmed some of our suspicions as we were up north is the 1998 Legislative Auditor's Report. The Auditor's Report had some good challenges for the legislature, and I don't feel like we have acted on those yet, and I think that now is time. So first, if you have one of the letters in your packets from James Noble in response to the Auditor's Report, but in order to save paper, I am just going to read you some of the pieces that I have put in packets in earlier committee hearings. First of all, in the executive summary of the legislator's auditor's report of 1998, the auditor says the legislature should require the DNR to report regularly on school trust lands. Another point that the auditor brings up is the legislature should consider constitutional and statutory changes to maximize the fund's revenue and growth. In the summary, it says, the auditor's report says, but we think that the DNR should consider the possibility of assigning specific staff responsibility for coordinating school trust land activities within the department. And then I believe you have a copy of this, a letter from the auditor. And it's, no, I'm sorry, you don't. This is another saving paper initiative. From James Noble in a letter. He states, the legislature has not always given consistent direction to the DNR on trust fund issues could benefit from better information and analysis from the DNR. And then you do have a copy of the letter written from Wayne Simino, former finance director and legislator. He points out that the oversight of the trust fund is neither comprehensive or consistent, largely because no single entity has been responsible for compiling and presenting comprehensive information to related to the school trust land management and the investment of the permanent school fund. And that he suggests also that we might want to consider permanent staff for the advisory committee. My bill does not take all of those points literally, but I think that what we have here is a compromise, a first phase of looking at the school trust lands and how can we maximize the revenues to the school districts as well as maintain the conservation values that are supposed to be used in managing those school trust lands. So, Madam Chair, if I may now go to the bill. Thank you. In Section 1 of the bill, all it does is it clarifies. Well, while we were up north, we talked a lot about who is responsible, who is wearing the school district hat when managing these lands. And the DNR very confidently, and we believe them, said it is the commissioner who should have that responsibility. My original bill took a little bit different approach of adding another person. It was Representative Gill in the last committee that made another suggestion on how to streamline that management a little bit more. And I've taken his suggestion into consideration and thus would delete everything amendment. But anyhow, either way, Subdivision 1 still, it just clarifies that the DNR commissioner has the sole authority and responsibility for administering the permanent school fund lands. And in there it clarifies certain charges that go along with that. And you will see those charges on line 1.9. of the amendment. And it does direct the commissioner to annually report to the school fund advisory committee on maximizing the permanent school fund revenue. And in summary, it just makes clear who is responsible for the legislature, and it clarifies the responsibilities of the commissioner from the school district perspective. Subdivision 2, it adds members to the advisory committee. And what we felt like as we went on the trip and what we information gathered and talking with the DNR and talking with the Minnesota School Board Association is that what we need to do is just bolster that committee. And so it has been the suggestion of actually some of our house research that we add more finance people and also the legislative auditor, that we add more finance people to that committee and to involve more of the private sector. So we are not changing who is already statutorily assigned to that committee, but we are just expanding the expertise. And that is on line 1.19 of the amendment. And then it also, in Subdivision 2, directs the committee to annually submit a report and draft legislation to the legislature on managing the school trust lands in order to secure a long-term economic return on the lands. And that is in Section 2.11. And then in what it also does is it makes some recommendations to the DNR for improving efficiency, reducing management expenses, accelerating land transfers, and maximizing economic return. And then it also directs the commissioner to supply some already existing administrative type help to the committee so that there is more of a streamlined process in communicating to the legislature. So as right now what I'd like to do is I would like to call on Bob Meyer from the DNR, who is testifying in support of the bill. Right, Bob? No, actually he has been extremely helpful, and I feel like we've been working together all the way through.
Did he bring his checkbook?
I'm sorry. No, there is no expense to this bill.
I do see expense in this bill, unfortunately. So that's why it's in Finance Committee, and that's the discussion we'll have to have.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Meyer, the Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. The department has been actively working with Representative Dietrich on this bill to draft it and get into a shape where it will reduce the fiscal impact that's there. A couple of things just to bring to your attention on lines 2.8-2.9. Says the members shall serve without compensation. The compensation that's in chapter 15.059 outlines that committees of this type are eligible for $55 per day per diem. We're making sure that that does not apply. The expenses that we need to try to figure out relate to the actual meetings of the committee. I envision the group, much like the day tour that we had, spending a lot of time in the woods, visiting mining operations, learning how natural resources actually are managed, silvicultural techniques, what those costs are that are incurred, that are certified against the trust, thinning, seeding, rock raking, perhaps, the costs that actually take place on forestry to get those long-term economic gains. So that's something we need to talk about, if that will just come out of our budget or what we'll do there. We haven't had a fiscal note formally requested on this language yet, or on the House bill. The Senate bill is much different, but that's not anything here. So we're working to try to reduce those costs. We do see the value of working with these people and moving forward to talk about the management of the land, but also recognize that conservation needs to be kept in mind as well.
Thank you. We will request the fiscal note, and at this point, just for members' information, next Tuesday we will hear from the administration on their proposal for budget cuts. So tentatively we will look at revisit this bill next Thursday. But the other budgetary issue that we'll have to talk about in the fiscal note is on line 1.9, where it says the commissioner shall accelerate land exchanges. The cost of land exchanges is something that we're just going to have to chat about. Hiring the attorneys, hiring the appraisers, doing all the work that it takes. So I see the biggest part of fiscal note involved in the word shall accelerate. So that's just, you know, how we're going to go about doing that, and who's charged with that. I mean, where the expenses are charged back. Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, just on that note, and we will work on that, thank you for the clarification. Appraisal costs are problematic. We do have a bill that's moving through the legislature that will help us expedite land exchanges and land sales to make sure that we don't lose large tracts of forest and expedite that, but it does not include school trust land. The biggest problem we have, one of the problems we have working with the federal government to exchange the trust lands in the boundary waters, which is almost 100,000 acres there, is the appraisal process, the cost, there's an EIS process at the federal level. If we could ever get through those hoops, and some of them I think are like flaming hoops actually, we would be able to benefit the trust greatly by another 100,000 acres of permanent forest land probably, but those costs are real, and it's something that we will be prepared for a discussion next weekend.
The other discussion I hope we have when you come in is that some of these lands are just going to be easier to deal with than the others. And instead of taking on the whole everything, what is the priority group of lands you want to go after? So it's much easier to do a fiscal note if we know which kinds of lands, and maybe that's asking a question in reverse, and folks have not met over that issue, but perhaps that's one of the first issues to be dealt with.
Madam Chair, I am not totally sure of the answer, and that's why I would just suggest that you and I talk more about this. The expenses that are incurred in managing the school trust lands, as you well know, are certified and charged to the fund. So I'm not sure, you know, when we ask for a fiscal note, I don't know if we are asking for a fiscal note for your particular committee, your budget, or if it is the ongoing cost of the DNR in managing the school trust lands. If these would be applied to that. And that would have been my initial impression in writing the bill. And maybe it is the wording, or maybe I just have it wrong.
Actually, the question I was asking was about the land exchanges. Which ones, since this is, has accelerated land exchanges, land sales, and commercial leasing, where's the greatest opportunity here? I mean, instead of going after everything at once, what's the priority opportunity? What would be the least expensive and have the biggest bang for the buck? That's the question I was trying to get at, right?
Madam Chair, excellent question. And I hope that we can continue this conversation, and if you would, you know, with your expertise, look at that advisory committee and see if you think that that will provide, the people on the advisory committee will really be able to help the DNR prioritize and say which lands. And we really do accept the fact that every piece of land is unique and it is different, and that is the reason for the advisory committee to really investigate and look and prioritize. Madam Chair, may I call on Grace Schwab from the Minnesota School Board Association?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. My name is Grace Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Board Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota. We'd like to thank Representative Beatrice and the DNR for working with us on this issue. It is our children and their future that we're here for, and it's really the possibility for growth. And we're seeing it happen around the country, especially in Utah, as we mentioned earlier. They just some better management of the land, a little bit more fiscal oversight of their land port, and were able to increase the revenue generated there 3 times since 2001. So there's some very positive stories out there. Oregon also has even stricter environmental statute pieces in their constitution in Minnesota, so, and they are also seeing growth in their school trust fund lands and the possibility to help education in this rather dire time for K-12 is wonderful. As you use free state assets for children and our land, is an exciting possibility, and we support the work.
I wish I was as hopeful going forward as you are, only because the economy has just changed so much from the time that other folks have had such terrific growth, and we have now gone into a very different kind of economy. And so the expectation I think we should all have going forward is that we're really preparing for the next boom and not this flat time that we're having. I can't see that we can replicate what happened 2 or 3 years ago in Oregon or Utah, even with the best, all the best minds working on it, because you just can't fight the economy that much. So.
Yes, and Madam Chair, in just closing, I would just like to comment that in the world of education, you even take away the bad economy right now, and we do face some really strong challenges with the future workforce and who they are going to be and create, and so I'll just leave it at that. But in summary, Madam Chair, would you like me to summarize, or would you?
I think we're all on the same page in that, and understanding that we need to do the best possible. I just feel like expectations for in the short term should not be made too high. And that's all. So, with that, please summarize. But there's a question from Representative Macmillan first.
Well, actually, I have a series of men, Chair, and if you want to cut me off, feel free. I'm not sure if the question's for the author, the first one, or Assistant Commissioner Meyer. It's got 600 and some million in the corpus of the fund, and I'm trying to realize why only 22 million, you know, approximately 3% is distributed. I would think the return, I mean, the history would be that more would be coming out of that.
Madam Chair, I'll start to address that, or not address that. We all have those questions, and that's the reason for the bill. The first of all, is the corpus fund exactly now? We just got a report, $733 million. And when you look at that money actually going to the school district that in that fund is a 3.4% investment on the return, and you're right, that is dismal.
Madam Chair, to that point, Representative Dietrich, is it not the investment doesn't mirror the other State Board of Investment investments that historically attract in excess of 9%? Is it invested differently?
Madam Chair, the one thing that I was going to continue on that in what I said earlier, now the State Board of Investment will say that that is a 15% increase, but the dividends on stocks and stuff are considered an asset, and they go back into the corpus fund instead of going to the school district. So it is just that 3.4% that goes to the school district, and that is the reason that you have the 600 and some million in the corpus, but actually there's 700 and some million.
Madam Chair, Representative Dietrich, is it in statute that the 3.4%, or why is that the number being distributed instead of a more realistic, larger number?
Madam Chair, what is distributed is what is the net profit off of the corpus. That is not in statute. Each year, that is different.
Representative McNamara, we are going to have some more opportunities. I think these fiscal questions are extremely important.
Okay. If I could, Madam Chair, I've got that one, it seems. And then this would probably reach out to maybe a couple more of them. Assistant Commissioner, if I could just ask, and maybe it'll come up later, but a couple other things. Who's negotiating an $8.6 million lease with U.S. MinTac? That would be one. Do you currently have the ability to hire people with financial expertise in that kind of activity if it's under your authority? And it looks like when you guys toured up north, you had a presentation from Utah's trust land program, and I would wonder, have you learned anything from that? And I thought I had one more, Madam Chair, but if you're telling us we're going to get another opportunity. I guess the most important thing, Assistant Commissioner, do you have currently the authority to hire a numbers person to deal with some of this if you don't have the expertise within the department today?
Madam Chair, members, we do have economists, sports economists on staff. We have economists or financial experts in our minerals division that are dealing with the leases, dealing with the revenues that are coming off those leases going into the trust fund. We also work at other levels, contracting, making sure that those receipts, the gate receipts, the tonnage, it's a complicated issue, making sure that what's being mined off of the ground is being tracked and those revenues come to the state, the royalties that are out there. So we are working on that. We do have staff doing that. The MinTac lease is being negotiated through our Lands and Minerals Division currently. And then the Utah, we're looking at all the state programs that are out there. There's some information I can get members if they're interested on those programs to see that. But we're trying to figure out, trying to learn from what other states are doing. But as Madam Chair represented, the economy, the timber economy in the past 5 years has changed drastically. Where we were at $100 a cord, we're at 23 right now, and we're hoping to keep that. I mean, we've lost several chipboard plants, the OSB wood that was manufactured in northern Minnesota and Grand Rapids, Cook. Those facilities are shut down. We do have, luckily, our forest certification process moving forward with that is keeping us in the market for paper. But it's a drastic change what we've seen 5 years ago. Luckily, the mining side of it, and that's why you see the revenue is so drastic from minerals to forestry, the mining side of it has increased dramatically. And the opportunities out there in the future are incredible as well. But the steel issue, the steel is what's really been driving the growth in the trust fund from the lands that we've been, from the money we've been depositing into the account.
Representative McNamara, I would suggest that if it's okay with you, and we do need to get the session earlier today, that we are going to revisit these questions, and if you have questions that you want to share with the committee to ask or ask them individually for them to present next time, because I think the one of the issues here is if we look at where the best bang for the buck may be, it may actually be in those mining leases, and we don't want to get distracted from where the economy is weak and talk too much about forestry at this point, I think. Well, I mean, just as you can do as you will, but
My guess is...
I'd like to do what you will.
My guess is that we really want to talk more about the opportunities in mining rather than the opportunities lost in forestry, if that's the...
Thank you, Madam Chair, and then we will focus on that in the next hearing.
Okay, and so if you would like to sum up, because we will be chatting.
Thank you. The future of these trust lands are very complex. There are great opportunities, renewable energy, the logging, the mining, the leasing lands, land exchanges, and that is the reason for expanding the advisory committee and for making the changes that we have in this bill. So I look forward to being back here next week, and I thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you for coming. Okay. With that, we did not move the bill because it was not in our committee for those who are wondering why we didn't do that. Right now, I'm going to
While Chair Wagenius is making her way to the podium, Representative Gardner on... Representative Gardner is deep in conversation.
Boy.
Representative Gardner, I know that you are as astute as I am in reading the previous minutes. Would you move the series of amendments minutes which we have here from February 18th, 19th, 20th, 21st, 26th, 28th, and March 4th? Those are all in front of you.
I would, as long as we have the ones for February 30th, Mr. Chair. Yes, so moved.
Thank you, Representative. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Chair Wagenius.
Thank you, Chair Doty. I would like to move House Bill 2745, recommend that it be passed and returned to the Committee on Finance. This is the bill that has come from the Legislative Committee, Citizens. LCCMR, okay? And with me this morning is Susan Thornton, who is the acting director, so she will be chatting with you also. There are 36 proposals recommended by the commission. Land acquisition is $12 million in fee enhancement for an estimated 3,400 acres. Restoration is at about $2.5 million for an estimated 12,900 acres. Information and analysis, like for the soil survey, the biological survey, the geological atlas, is for $5,700,000. Research for $2 million, and education for $1.2 million. So that is the overall summation of what is in this bill. I will go over it very quickly with you, and then we'll have questions, and there is a CARES amendment. So I gave you the overall in terms of dollars, but in breaking it down, the Metro Conservation Quarter is two for almost $16 million, and you will see a list under there starting on line 2.3 to 3.4 of who are recipients of those. I won't read them. I think you can read faster than I can say it. There is the, on page 4, is the Vermilion Quarter, River Quarter acquisition, and this is the Dakota County Vermilion. I always have to separate that from the Up North Vermilion, and that's for $400,000 on line 4.30 is the Minnesota Habitat Conservation Partnership. Is $3.15 million, and you will see then starting on line 4.35 all the way down next page to 5.17, a list of folks
organizations who are receiving the money and those dollars. There, on page 6, the preservation of Avon Hills landscape received $337,000. That's at the St. George Arboretum and University in that area. At the bottom of that page 6, is the Minnesota River Valley Green Quarter Land Protection. That's a Southwest initiative. On page 7, in the middle of the page at 7.18, is the Scientific and Natural Area Acquisition for $1 million. This is in the southern two-thirds of the state for, because we have had complaints of purchasing too much SNH in the north, and the southern parts of our state have complained about not getting enough. So there's $500,000 to consolidate land ownership through acquisition to reduce forest fragmentation. That's on 7.26. If you go over to page 8, we're on 8.13 in state parks and trail acquisition at $1.5 million. 8.24 is the Metropolitan Regional Park System land acquisition. 9.13 are local initiative grants for $1 million. And that, if you go down that, is the grant to Wright County for land acquisition for the proposed regional parks on the Bertram chain of lakes in Wright County. And if you'll remember that this committee also recommended money for that in our bonding recommendations. On 9.32 is Conservation Partnership, a matching grant program for locals. And that's for county design. Okay. 10.6, County Trail System Design, and that's to be used to design a regional trail system for Lyon, Brown, Redwood, and Renville counties. On 10.11 is accelerated prairie management survey acquisition and evaluation. And then on 10.32, prairie ecosystem restoration. That is in Martin County. That's $800,000 for Martin County. And 11.11 is best management practices for native prairies. That's now we're getting to some of the projects going to the University of Minnesota. Some of the scientists there, 11.19 is the impacts of climate change and CO2 on prairie and forest production. On 11.23, biofuel production and wildlife conservation and working prairies. In other words, how much cellulose can be taken off and still protect the wildlife. And then another section of way out of the CMR with their things is water resources, and that starts on page 12.13. This is the, you heard testimony about this project in the last meeting on line 12.27, accelerating plans for integrated control of common carp, which happens to be my favorite project in this whole thing. That's money from the University of Minnesota, for some scientists working on carp control. 13.1, testing pesticides and degradates in public drinking water. That is money to the Commissioner of Agriculture for purchasing equipment that they requested on page 13.10. Assessment of riparian buffers in the Whitewater Whitewater River watershed. And remember, that's where we had flooding this year, this last year. On
line 13.22. This is a project at Cass County to develop some innovative zoning to protect water quality near shoreline habitat. Line 14.1, the native shoreline buffer incentive program. In line 14.16, the Southeast Minnesota Stream Restoration Project. This is from Trout Unlimited. In line 14.29, it's the South Central Minnesota Groundwater Monitoring Geological Atlases. This is part of the information that Minnesota is lacking, and we accelerated the geologic atlases that can tell us how much groundwater we have or do not have in the state. Line 15.15 is some Lake Superior research. And then more natural resources information starting on line 15.31, where this is updating the National Wetlands Inventory. On 16.9 is the completion of our soil survey and mapping. On line 16.19 is updating precipitation intensities for runoff estimation and infrastructure design. That's an issue that I think this committee is going to have to wrestle with more in the future about how we're getting bigger storm events, and our measurement of rainfall and all our estimates are based on the past, on the far past, and we're probably not doing a good job for Minnesotans at this point. And line 17.1 is $270,000 for a statewide survey of breeding birds from Audubon. And on 17.14, this is from Ducks Unlimited. They're looking at a restorable wetlands inventory. On line 17.26, wildlife disease surveillance done by the Raptor Center. 18.13 is something that has been discussed at length. DNR has many, many easements. Unfortunately, they don't know how many. The estimate is between 1,000 and 5,000. And, of course, if they don't know how many they are, they don't know where they are, you know, what kind they are. And because of all of that, they certainly are not going out and checking to see if we are getting, or Minnesotans are getting value for those easements. So what LCCMR is appropriating money for there is for the DNR to figure out how it's going to figure out where its easements are and what kind they are. So that is what that is about. I think you're going to hear lots more discussion about that if you in coming years. On line 18.27, there's environmental education, and that's at the Bell Museum doing a documentation on water sheds. And on line 19.10, there is a project at the PTA for reducing carbon footprints in Minnesota schools. In line 19.23, there's money in an emerging issues account. And then we have the riders. But before we go into the riders, I thought it would be best to ask if there are any questions about the specific appropriations in these specific programs.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, I just have a question on page 5. There's an appropriation of $597,500 for Ducks Unlimited. I think it's broken out into a couple of different projects. The one I'm wondering about is it's itemized as 3D Wetland Reserve Program, Ducks Unlimited, NRCF, $267,500. What is that actually going to be used for?
If I would like to defer to Ms. Thornton for that.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, members, my name is Susan Thornton, the Interim Director of the Legislative Citizen Commission, Minnesota Resources, LCCMR. And before I answer your question, I want to make the offer. We've got Mike Banker, Michael McDonough, and our staff here, Diana Griffiths, and we'd be happy to meet with any members later on any additional specific questions as you go out of here. We're just down in room 65, down in the corner, or around the corner. Representative McNamara, can you, what line are you on, may I ask?
It's on page 5, line 6. It's the DU appropriation, and I believe it's broken down into a number. I center around the money that we're, must be a pass-through with the department going to DU, I'm assuming, for $267,000, $500 for the Wetland Reserve Program. And I'm just wondering what that money is being used
Representative
for.
Representative McNamara, are you on the spreadsheet?
Good.
And it's for the WRP. The DU, NRCS can get money to actually do the construction efforts, the restoration efforts, but they do not have dollars for the staffing efforts. And so what the commission has been doing to the Wildlife Habitat, to the Habitat Corridor Partnership over the last several biennia, is to provide the DU provides the technical assistance, the technical staffing, and going out and working with landowners to not only the restoration efforts but the easement efforts, and that has enabled NRCS to bring a fair amount of federal funds to the state of Minnesota in order to for those accomplishments.
Mr. Chair, did you say it's for mapping? I missed the key word you said. What's the money that you...
It's staffing, technical assistance. Okay. To provide the staffing that the federal money will not provide the staffing and technical assistance for. So it creates a match to enable the federal funds to, for NRCS to be able to get the federal funds for Minnesota for easements for construction, restoration of wetlands and easements.
Other questions, members? Representative Gardner.
Just a quick comment to the LCC, Martin. Page 22 and 23 of the bill. Every time the LCC, bill comes through, there's always a subdivision about having all the entities that receive grants comply with the same purchasing requirements that the Department of Administration has to comply with on recycled and recyclable materials and energy conservation and sustainable building guidelines. You don't need to answer now because we need to go, but every time this comes up, I'll just mention I hope that we're conveying that to the recipients to make sure that they actually do it. And that's all I have to say.
Madam Chair.
Yes, I'd like to move an amendment A1. You'll see in here there's some rider language that is in here that I am just updating, and there's two sections I want to call your attention to. Restoration, the language is older, and we've had testimony in this committee and in Representative Hansen's committee about the ability to use native to the local ecotype. So this is saying to the extent possible use native of the local ecotype, but it does say to the extent possible, it doesn't say it's mandatory. The other thing is that there is language on easements, and this has been updated starting it really on line 2.18, number 5. There was much discussion in LCCMR about the responsibility of those who purchase easements and then transfer those easements to the state of Minnesota. And the discussions a lot center around money, of course, what else? There are folks who receive donations because they are making these transfers. And
The discussion revolved around whether or not these discussions should be made public or whether they were private. And I will tell you that the commission believes that they should be private. I think legislators have a different sensitivity to expending public dollars. And the sensitivity is that when public dollars are expended, the public should know how its money is being spent. So you will see in this section that when an easement is acquired by a nonprofit, and that is going to then be transferred to the state, then whoever is doing it is going to provide documentation of all related transaction costs, including but not limited to appraisals, legal fees, reporting fees, commissions, other similar costs, and donations. And it is the donations that I think would be the red flag for some of the nonprofits. They would prefer not to have those donations be made public. But since this is the public dollars that are being expended, I think it is the public's right to know how the money is being expended. So you see that amendment, and I think I am telling you where the tripping points are. With that, I take questions and would renew my motion.
Members, any questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Members, I would renew the motion that House File 2745 be recommended to pass and return to the Committee on Finance.
Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius, thank you for sponsoring this bill this year. And also I want to thank the LCCMR staff. You know, we just switched from a two-year process to a one-year process. So basically, they've been doing double the amount of work to put this package together each year now. And at this moment, they're short-staffed as well. I just wanted to point out to the committee members the blue sheet in your packet, which goes through the process that these projects were put together. It was a group of 17 people, and as you know, we've recently switched to citizen members as well as House and Senate members. We met over several months. There were 118 proposals received for almost $100 million. And you can see now what we have funded in this package, 37 appropriations for about $23 million. So it was a very competitive process, and lots of discussions, lots of compromises through the process to get to the point where this package has come together. And I feel like it's a really well-balanced package geographically among the issues, and certainly, you know, there was an important role played by both the citizens and the legislators in this process. So I feel really confident that this is a good package that will do good things for our state. And one of the main things is it does not supplant any of the current things within our state budget. So appreciate your support on this project.
Representative Guinness.
I think Representative Tinglestead is far more alert than I am this morning because I was remiss in not thanking the staff that done yeoman's work this year. But also Representative Tinglestead has done that same kind of work. She has co-chaired this commission through, I think, a very hard time where folks were readjusting to a new way of doing business and on several levels, both with going year to year, but also with members who are not used to the legislative process the way we are used to the legislative process. And
I think, probably had the most difficult job of all in Cary as we went through. And during the administration, which I did not participate in, but watched from afar with great awe. So, with that, I would like to renew my motion that House File 2745 be recommended to the House.
Members, you have heard the recommendation, the renewal of the motion that House File 2745 as amended be recommended to pass. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The bill is passed and will be returned to the Committee on Finance. Do we have any other business to come before the committee today? We're adjourned.